How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
All right, everybody. It is Thursday night. That's right. Thursday night, August 1st, 2024. You are listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the ChairShot Radio Network. You can find us on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. I am the man with the award-winning and holy beard, DJ. We've got a huge show lined up for you guys tonight. I'm going to go around the room here real quick, introduce my cast of characters because we got to get moving. First, the resident flyer of the high flyer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. He is Bucky's tag team partner, hails from Purple Haze and Cloud Nine, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, welcome to the show.
Thank you, my friends. It's wonderful to be here, as always.
And from the Rob the Genius Podcast, he is the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data, the official shoot bearer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, and the man with the golden shovel, Mr. Rob, sir, how you doing?
All right, long day. I was training people today, and I wasn't properly caffeinated this morning, so I had But now, this evening, I have a nice iced tea from Chick-fil-A, but it has been enhanced with a little bit of the old Lucky number 7.
Rob's pre-gaming here. He's pre-gaming because we've got a really important show tonight. This is a big one for us. Very, very excited about tonight's episode. We're going to start off talking SummerSlam. First half of the show is going to be our SummerSlam predictions, talking a little bit about the card. And then in about 45 minutes or so, we're going to have some special guests on here. The men behind a new pro wrestling documentary called When Giants Walked Here. And basically what this is it's a historical documentary talking about the historical Dorton Arena in Raleigh, North Carolina, and its history with pro wrestling. And, you know, there's a lot of history there, a lot of good pro wrestling history, a lot of stuff that Rob and I are going to be able to call back to because a lot of the really good stuff happened in our era. I think it was Mid-Atlantic was there, part of the NWA went through there, and a lot of really big, big wrestling names from the 80s. We're going to have these two gentlemen on here. Like I said, in about 45 minutes, we're going to talk to them, ask some questions. They're going to tell us a little bit more about what this documentary is all about. So we're looking really, really forward to that one. And Rob, I want to thank you for brokering this deal.
No problem, man. It was it's funny how these things work. I'm in a Facebook group for black wrestling fans. And one of the guys just plugged it in there. And if anybody's, you know, got any inquiries, let them know. So I figured, why the hell not? I mean, you know, seems like an interesting enough thing. So I just DM'd him and then he got back to me and was like, okay, cool. Let's do this.
Yeah. We're really excited about that, but we're on a time crunch because we're going to have these guys up here. Like I said, in about 40 minutes or so, we're going to get into SummerSlam. That is at the airing of this podcast tonight, which would be Saturday, but it's 48 hours out from where we're recording because we record on a Thursday night, peeling back the curtain there a little bit. I'm going to turn this over to Jason, who, as usual, handles the card for us. We're not going to go too deep on a whole lot of it. We do want to talk about some of it and give our predictions on the matches. Jason, the floor is yours.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to go down the order in the card I found. So we're just going to start off with Damian Priest defending his World Heavyweight Championship against King of the Ring, Gunther. Quickly, I mean, it's time, Damian. I mean, we've been back and forth, and if we really did all this with Gunther and we're not going to do it, then I don't know what we're doing. This one seems to be a pretty foregone conclusion. It just matters how it happens for Damian, whether it's someone tries to interfere and fucks up, someone doesn't try to interfere, someone screws him, something like that. Well, then we'll find out what's next for Damian Priest. But, Rob?
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, it's been kind of telegraphed since Gunther lost at WrestleMania that, you know, this is what was going to be next. So for me, to that end, I'll say the last couple of weeks, they have done an excellent job of sowing a little bit of doubt into it, you know. At least not making Damian look like just dead man walking, you know. The last couple of weeks, I think they've done a good job with that. That being said, I think it's gonna happen. And it's just, yeah, I think somebody's getting involved. You know, there's gonna be, it's not gonna be clean. There's gonna be some shenanigans of some type with, you know, and I think it's gonna be right. Finn Balor doing something.
DJ?
Yeah, I think the finish to this one's pretty much a slam dunk. And the only question that I have here, and I'm going to throw this around the room, is this a clean finish or is this a wonky finish? I think we all agree Gunther's winning, but how we get there may be some debate. I think it's a clean finish because it's Gunther. Gunther, they have proven, he can clean as a whistle, as Jason likes to say, beat anybody that he's come up against, save for Sami Zayn. So I think that you go the clean route here because I think, and I'll start with Jason, if you go with a wonky shenanigans finish, does it hurt the mystique of Gunther?
Depends on how it's executed, obviously. I think it's going to be wonky because it's going to be maybe the wonk is the fact that he keeps looking at the back and no one comes out. In that case, maybe, but it's going to be a wonky finish to protect Damian. As much as you want to preserve the mystique of Gunther, I don't think Gunther loses anything by, as long as he's not the one who gets okey-doked and he somehow like falls into this win, it's fine. He'll be just fine. It's going to be a wonky finish though.
Okay. Rob, what do you think? Same question.
I think it's going to be, yeah, because I think we're going with the splintering of Judgment Day. I think that's going to kick into overdrive on this show, and you know, we'll get to the other half of that later, but the first half of that is some shit happening to Damian. And so I think, and look, you can do it as long as he doesn't, like, if he has Gunther pinned in the middle of the ring for like an 8 count and then, you know, the referee's out or something, then yeah, that makes Gunther look bad, right? But if not, if it's just, you know, both of them are down, Finn runs in there and hits Damian either by accident or whatever, and then runs out of the ring, and then Gunther just picks him up and power bombs him, then I think it's fine.
Okay. All right.
I think, put it this way. I think, okay, it's not going to be Damian gets knocked out and Gunther drapes his arm over him. It's not going to be that.
Right.
So Gunther's going to pick him up and do the power bomb or whatever. But before
it's going to be a splatter finish, even if there's shenanigans.
Yeah. So
okay.
He might be power bombing a corpse, but he's not gonna like banana peel his way into this.
No.
Okay. Okay.
I think that's where it goes.
What's next, Jason?
It is the WWE Women's Champion Bayley defending her championship against Nia Jax. So, I don't know how to call this one, but if I'm going to, yeah, Bayley's gonna lose here. Thanks, honey. My wife's helping me apparently, so she thinks Bayley's gonna lose. So there, you know what? My wife is always right. Bayley's gonna lose. Rob.
I think whatever happens over there. Yeah, I think Bayley is not walking out as champion. Whatever happens. I hope they don't do the briefcase here because they did the briefcase at SummerSlam last year. And like I've said before, damn it, do the briefcase on TV, Hunter. Okay.
Yeah.
Just want, do it on TV, make, man.
Just make people want, when was the last time it was on TV? And it was a win. Sorry. Actually, I should say that.
I think it was E.
Yeah,
Big E was the last one to cash in on TV.
The dumbest wrestling show that I never went to that was in my backyard because I'm an idiot.
that's 3 years ago. So it's time. Do one on TV, man. Don't do it here. And then, don't wait till WrestleMania next year either. Come on, dude.
Just, all right. So
don't do it here. Just do it. Now, Jack,
no cash in. Who wins?
Not Jack wins.
All right. Rob, I have DJ, whoever you are.
Nia Jax is winning this. I love Bayley. I've loved this championship run. I'm glad she got her WrestleMania moment. But it's time to do something with Nia Jax. She's been incredible since she's been back. She's that monster heel that you can build up to build the next girl up to.
Okay. Sounds good. Next up, we have another women's match. We have the women's world champion.
Uh-oh. Rob's already expressing his displeasure.
Rob, are you there? Rob? Yeah. Rob?
I'm just kidding.
All right, so we got Liv Morgan defending her championship against Rhea Ripley. Either this is the shortest match of all time and we're picking pieces of Liv Morgan out of the Cleveland Browns Stadium for about 10 years. Or I think Dom Dom's going to turn on mommy here, and I think it's going to get bad for a lot of people. And I think Liv is going to, continue her little revenge tour. Rob?
Okay, so they've been telegraphing the Dominic thing so hard. Every time I try to be contrarian with Triple H, he does the obvious. So they've been telegraphing it. So the obvious thing is going to happen because that's what he does.
Rob's thinking the same lines I am. I'm expecting a swerve, but it's Triple H and he's notorious for playing it right down the middle.
And so I'm expecting Balor to get involved in this also, I'm gonna play it safe. Dom's gonna, and Dom may not do it on purpose, but he's going to be the reason. You know, this might be the accidental one, and then the next one might be the deliberate one.
Okay.
But he is somehow going to cause Rhea to not win.
Okay.
Did?
I don't know exactly what's going to happen. All I'll say is that Liv Morgan leaves as champion. I don't expect there to be a definitive finish to this match.
Fair enough. All right. Next up, we have the United States champion Logan Paul defending against challenger LA Knight. Yeah. I think it's time. We got to crown LA Knight. There's no way we're doing this again because when did they last fight for this thing?
Oh,
he was in a triple threat. No, that was Randy and Kevin.
Yeah, that was at WrestleMania.
Oh yeah,
I think that's the last time he defended it, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then the only time before that was at Royal Rumble. So two title defenses here for Logan Paul.
Yeah, so he's white. I mean, and LA Knight's hot as all hell right now. So it's time. Like this is the easiest decision in the world, and we get to whatever Logan Paul does next. Maybe Logan Paul takes a little hiatus and does some his own thing for a little while. I would imagine that might be in the cards and then come back in the Survivor Series build. But I don't know. So, Rob?
Okay, so this is shit or get off pot time the other night. He's got to win something. I mean, at some point, you can't just... Yeah, he got to win something here. Otherwise... as much as people love the guy, if he doesn't win something, then he eventually turns into a guy who's not going to win anything. And people will, as much as they love the guy, they'll start losing interest because, so yes, he's got to win this. This is a must win. And so he's got to win this here. So I'm going to pick him to win.
All right, DJ, I saw you nodding when Rob was calling it must win. Go on.
It is. We've done this with LA Knight enough. It's like he's got to win the big feud at some point. And there's no – he's not on Raw, so he's not even in the world championship picture. There's no room for him in the Universal Championship picture because there's just too much going on with the Bloodline and Cody and everything there. We've got to give up something, and the U.S. Championship is a great consolation prize for LA Knight for where he's at in his career right now.
And honestly, I mean, that's about where we had him anyway. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I see him somewhere down the line getting one run with the World Heavyweight Championship, but long term, no. And I like the guy. I hate saying that. I like him, but
there's just something, and this isn't a knock. But he's so well suited for the mid card. Like I don't like.
Yeah, you gotta have somebody interesting there.
What? Right.
Like you have to have like I look. Okay, this is how I look at him. He's a modern day Razor Ramon. He's awesome.
He's a utility player.
He's awesome. He's a great plug and play guy. He'll do anything you need him to do, and he'll do it well. But there's a role for people like that, and this is the role for him.
The thing is, DJ, you're right about everything you just said, and he'll be able to do it with almost anybody on the other side of the ring.
Yes.
And that's why you keep him in that upper mid-card area, because that's where you have the most traffic. You have people going up and down there all the time. So
Not as many people are going to float. Not as many people are going to float in and out of the main event on Raw and SmackDown.
Correct.
Yeah.
Speaking of people, well, actually, did everybody go for that one? I'm sorry.
Yes.
We get set up. Excellent. Good. So speaking of that, we have Sami Zayn defending his Intercontinental Championship against Bron Breakker. Speaking of people going up the card, I think this is the moment for Bron. I think this, whether it's some sort of chicanery that ends it, which I imagine they'll protect Sami through some sort of chicanery. Then, yeah, I think this is Bron Breakker's going to get crowned here. And DJ, what do you think?
Yeah, we absolutely put it on Bron here. Sammy's been great. Sammy's been awesome. But we can't have – Bron can't lose again. Like, we did it once, and a lot of people felt how they felt about it. If we do it again here, we're really – we've got to start asking some questions.
Sammy's got a full dance card. If this show ends the way I hope it's going to. So.
And Sammy's always got a place in the World Heavyweight Championship picture as well. You know, it's right. Not the end of his career if he loses the Intercontinental Championship to Bron Breakker. It's he's one promo away from winning the World Heavyweight Championship.
I could see him smashing any one of the gentlemen who have competed for the World Heavyweight title. I could imagine him in a ring with them winning it from them.
Yes.
It's not even a question. Rob, what do you got?
Okay, now, our boss, Greg DeMarco, said a few weeks ago on Twitter that at this point, he thinks, you know, Bron doesn't really need it and that you can just move him along. And I don't think that's a crazy idea because... I mean, if he wins it here, then okay. Well, like, what are we waiting for, right? And look, if he just wins it here, and then we do another thing where he holds it, where he keeps it till WrestleMania and loses it. I mean, yeah, I'm not really in the mood for that. You know, we did that with Gunther. You know, I'd rather, you know, but. Do I think he's going to win it here? Probably. Personally, now, I mean, the way I'm looking at it now, I would rather, because, you know, I'd rather, you know, we need to do a little hot potato with one of these belts. I mean, and I think there's almost zero chance that happens if Bron wins it here. So now, as much as I was not happy about him losing in Money in the Bank, I'd be okay with him not winning it here.
Jeez.
It's interesting when you pay attention to the story makes sense.
Well, I mean, we'll put it this way. I think if you were going to put it on him, then I still would have just put it on the Money in the Bank. Yeah. I do not see, and I, you know, y'all are just not going to convince me of the value of delaying it for a month. But personally, I'm at the point now where I'd rather him not win it than to have him win it, and then for the next 8 months, we're just like, okay, who's going to beat him at WrestleMania? Right? I don't want, because I don't want that. I need some more action with these belts. Because over the past year, it's been wait till WrestleMania for too many of them. And I need some more action with these belts here. And I think we're more likely to get more action if Sammy hangs on this time. So I'm rooting for Sammy this time.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't categorize this one as a must win for Breaker like I would LA Knight in his match.
Yeah, and in that context, if Rob just put it in, it's not a slam dunk.
No, no, definitely not. I think that's where the winds are blowing, and I think it's not a crime if he does win it. But no, he could lose, sure. But like I said, Sammy might have shit to do soon. So next. Sorry, go ahead.
If Sammy gets through this, he's not going to have it much longer.
Right.
Which is why I would kind of be in favor of him winning here, because if Braun wins it here, Braun's going to be sitting on that thing until WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Goddamn. And at this point, I'd just rather not do that again.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. So next up, we have a good old-fashioned grudge match, but it does have a special guest referee. We have one Philip Seymour Punk facing off against the hero of WrestleMania, Drew McIntyre. So, and of course, we cannot fail to mention that Seth freaking Rollins, the architect himself, will be our special guest referee. And if you saw his outfit on Monday, I can promise you guys, why are you getting also bent out of shape about him giving away his outfit before the pay-per-view? That's not his outfit. He has a whole second outfit ready for Saturday. I will almost guarantee it. Yes. For this match, I hope and pray and just wish for that Drew McIntyre beats the ever-loving daylights out of CM Punk, and that this is just all your chickens have come home to roost, man. Like, you've walked around pissing everybody off and pissing these dudes off and getting in their business. Well, here you go. And then, we'll have a rebirth and a come to Jesus story, all the way through Royal Rumble. And then we'll ride that lightning to that sweet babyface CM Punk. And I'm going to want to throw up all over the place. But tonight on Saturday, we will sip from the cup of glory. We will toast the finest Claymore you've ever seen, and we will enjoy our wonderful new champion of our hearts anyway, Drew McIntyre. Rob?
Okay. What I'm hoping for, I'm hoping that we get the SummerSlam 97 ending. And for those of you wondering, that is Bret Hart versus The Undertaker. And Shawn Michaels was the referee, and it's one of the best finishes ever, because it was a no DQ match. Bret had the chair, was about to swing at the Undertaker. Shawn pulled the chair out of his hand. Bret spat on him, and then Shawn got pissed and swung the chair. Bret moved out of the way. Shawn clocks the Undertaker, and then Bret just lays on him like, "Look, count, motherfucker."
Yep.
And Shawn has to count three. And because, the stipulation was if Shawn was biased, he would get fired. So he knocks out the Undertaker, and Bret just covers him like, count, bitch. And Shawn has to count three, and he just gets this pissed off look on his face like, oh, fuck.
A lot of really good stuff spun out of that, because that eventually, the trajectory from there eventually led us to the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels feuds.
Yeah.
Which were incredible.
I'm hoping for something like that. I'm hoping that, I'm hoping that, you know, Seth gets whoever he's most pissed off at, he has to end up counting the pin for.
Well, that sucks, because I think that's Punk.
That's the only problem. That would be Punk, yeah. So
Rob, you made an enemy of me. Oh. DJ?
Well, that's the thing, though. I think, that Rollins ends up cranking Punk with it. If that happens, he cranks Punk, because I think the end game is Punk and Rollins at WrestleMania.
Probably, yeah.
But I also think that this is not the one and only match between Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. Yeah. I think this ends up being a trilogy. I think the final match ends up some type of gimmick, whether it's a last man standing or a Hell in the Cell or, I don't know, Rage on the Roof or whatever they're going to do. I don't think this is a one and done feud. Yeah. Regardless of, I'm not even going to pick a winner because I don't think it's a one and done.
Choose.
Drew McIntyre.
Thank you.
I don't want Jason mad at me.
I do think Drew
Side would. Side note. Can Punk go?
We're going to find out.
In 48 hours, we are going to find out whether CM Punk has gas in the tank.
I want to remind everyone that he has still not had a televised match since coming back to WWE, aside from being in the Royal Rumble and immediately injuring himself. Aside from that, the Royal Rumble, he was supposed to win, by the way. And
he looked good in the Rumble.
Live event. He looked good in the Rumble until he didn't.
He got hurt!
Oh, please. That guy was sucking wind like minute two. But anyway, he's had two live matches against Dom Mysterio, which were, what, a year and a half ago? So they were probably well more gimmick.
A year and a half ago? He's only been back for 9 months. A year and a half ago, the hyperbole on this goddamn show.
Well, you're going, so you're just chasing Dominic around the ring, not doing any wrestling. Well, now you're in the ring with an actual wrestler.
Dom is a classic heel. That's how you grab classic heel heat.
Exactly. So I'm saying you didn't actually have to wrestle. You had to sports entertain, which I admit you're still very good at. But you, last I saw you, you couldn't fucking wrestle, dude.
Yes. So, let go of your hate and your anger. Let it flow through you.
This is great because normally I'm the one that's dismissive of somebody that you guys are talking up. And it's fun to
hear. I'm just asking questions.
And Jason is forever unleaded on Pump 12, buddy.
So Jason, have we been giving him a participation trophy?
Oh, absolutely! Everyone's been giving him a participation trophy. Now, don't get me wrong. I'll even tell you, he's been working awesome. Like with what he's given, with his bum shoulder and all this stuff. He has been legitimately sports entertaining. I can't take that away from him. It sucks. It blows. It is what it is. He lost his fastball, but he's still one of the better dudes on the stick. He just is. So it is what it is. But I'm going to take great joy in all these people who are like, oh, this, you know, the best in the world is has a special guest referee gimmick match. And by the time he's going to take one, like, suplex, and he's going to get up.
Jason, I disagree. Said it on Monday Night Raw. Now, I'm talking now. He said on Monday Night Raw he's got heart, Jason.
Exactly. Thank you. And that's the thing. You're cutting the heart promo like your goddamn Daniel Bryan. Get out of here. And I love the new moving renders they've got because Punk was very smart. He's in his gear, which we still haven't seen him in on fucking TV aside from the Rumble again. And he's already got his arms crossed doing the I'm the straight edge and I'm better than you thing. So you can't see that, this isn't the chest and midsection of CM Punk that you're used to, guys. So he's already got that up. So be like, no touchy.
All right, put down the hater aid and get to the main event.
This is great.
Rob's over here eating this shit up.
Okay, no, because normally I'm the one that's doing this, and you guys are looking at me like, how could you do this?
We got to switch the gimmicks up a little bit, pal.
Exactly. All right. So next up, we have two bozos fighting for a title that ain't theirs. We have The undisputed WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, defending his title against the self-proclaimed tribal chief, Solo Sikoa. Well, this is going to be bonkers, because I could see a scenario. All right, it's bold prediction time. Bold prediction time. Everybody's thinking Roman Reigns is coming back, right?
I think we all agree.
Yeah.
We all agree that Roman Reigns is coming back, right? So it's a matter of what's the function? What's the function? Does he come out at the end and just face down whoever the winner is, Cody or Solo, or just face down Solo or whatever, just pop out at the end, say, hi, I'm back? Or does he interfere in the main event? Does he spitefully help Cody win to spite Solo? Because in my opinion, from 10,000 feet, pretending you're the tribal chief, no matter how much love Roman has for that title, and wearing the Uefala that Roman's father presented him with, and just carrying that around, that's a much bigger offense. So Cody Rhodes, you can take the back burner. So there's a couple of different ways this could play out. And I could see a scenario where we just get bloodline shenanigans and Cody loses. And we get Roman on Friday or something like that. So we are wide open with possibilities. My biggest bold prediction, though, is that everybody is expecting Roman Reigns to come back. And Roman Reigns is not going to come back. But there is going to be another member of the bloodline going to come back. And that is going to be The Rock. And The Rock is going to help Solo Sikoa win the Universal Championship. That is my bold prediction, because that sets the scene for the Civil War. That sets the scene for, hey, this is who's actually been pulling the strings of the tribal chief and blah, blah, blah. And we get off to the races. We just fire this thing out of a cannon. And then I assume Roman comes back soon. That's my big bold prediction, is that The Rock is actually the lost Anoa'i who comes home. DJ, where do you want to go?
I like your prediction. I don't disagree with it. I'll build on it. I think that by hook or by crook, I can see a scenario where Solo Sikoa wins. And then what's the next premium live event? Because we're still 2 or 3 months out from – we've got some room between now and War Games, which is now in Vancouver, correct? Yes. They made the announcement today that Survivor Series War Games will be in Vancouver. We've got some time in between now and then. We've probably got at least one event between now and then.
It's Bash in Berlin, which I don't think what you're going to say happens. But then next, we have Bad Blood.
Bad Blood, Roman comes out and costs Solo the championship. Cody wins it back to acquire his second championship reign. Now we've set the table for Bloodline. Bloodbath, War Games in Vancouver.
All right. I like it. Rob?
Okay. I think, first of all, I have no idea how this match is going to end.
Oh, dude. Sorry,
The ring is going to be full of Samoans. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. And Tongans.
Gee, there's a reach of a prediction, Rob. Oh,
right. right. Okay. So,
DJ, put DJ's prediction in fucking Sharpie. Bad Blood's in Atlanta.
Oh, it's happening. It's going down that way.
Second championship in Atlanta? Come on.
Yeah.
Put that in Sharpie, dude. I didn't even think of that. Good job.
Okay.
Sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
No problem. No, I think it would be great. Because, look, we've been saying for a while, Cody needs to lose it and win it back. He doesn't need to go wire to wire with this thing. I think it would be great if Solo did win it here. And then again, Cody wins it back at Bad Blood. Fine. No problem. And cause look, right now, there's nobody there to help him right now, right? Randy's been taken out. Kevin's been taken out. Jimmy hasn't come back yet, so that, and There's nobody there to help him. So I think it would, you know, this is, you know, we accuse Hunter of being too obvious or too safe. This is the time to do something not safe. Okay. And, you know, pull the trigger and
we're sliding right into the doldrums.
Yeah. I mean, cause
yeah.
I think, look, you have Solo win it and then Roman just comes out and stares him down. Because I think I said this a few weeks ago. This look, if Roman doesn't come out there, there are going to be people who absolutely shit on the show.
Yeah.
Regardless of how good it is. Like,
even if my prediction comes true, though?
Well, look, honestly, I think it would make more sense for him to come back later. I think it would. Logistically, it would make more sense for him to not come back at some point.
But you got to give him something, and The Rock is something.
That's the only problem. Yeah, if it's not him, then that's the only problem. Like, you have to give him or Dwayne. You can't have Jimmy come out there. Because if Jimmy comes out this Saturday, it's going to be like when Rey Mysterio came out at number 30 and everybody wanted Daniel Bryan.
Right.
Okay, they're going to boo. They might throw trash in the ring, okay? And that's not fair to Jimmy. Jimmy don't deserve that, okay?
No.
So it's got to be. Otherwise, if you're not going to have Roman come out there, then Solo has to win because you have to have some type of, you know, big kind of oh my god ending. So if Roman's not coming out there, then I think Solo's got to win, and then you at least end with the shocker of him being Universal Champion. Because also, I mean, I know at some like you know. There's got to be a point to him doing all of this, right? Or there's got to be something they got to claim something by doing all of this. They can't just be doing all this to be, you know, thugs and beat people up. They have to, you know, So.
Yeah. You're good. Wrap up what you were going to say.
Okay. As we said on LA Knight, you got to win something. And I know they've been winning matches, but. The whole point is like he got to win something substantial, to claim like the villain victory or whatever for the moment. So
and it ups the stakes in the whole thing. So
yes, I'm going to say you know what? Yes, I'm let's get crazy. Solo wins.
There you go. Does Roman come back? I understand what you want to book, but do prediction time. Does Roman come back Saturday?
Yes.
Okay, that's my prediction too.
No action.
DJ, what do you think? What does he come back? Yes or no on Sunday?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Roman comes.
We
back.
All just booked it better, and it's okay if he comes back later. But safe money says he comes back. So, all right, I think that's the card. That is the card. Good job, guys.
All right, Jason, thank you very much. We are going to go to a quick commercial break. Before we do, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the t-shirts that are available from your favorite Chairshot Radio Network podcast, including this one you're listening to right now, the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Go there, check one out, pick one up. The starting artist on this show will thank you. Your body will thank you if you pick it up in soft style. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Like I said, we're going to commercial. When we come back, we are going to have the producers of the new wrestling documentary, When Giants Walked Here. When we come back, we're going to talk to them about the documentary, get to know them a little bit better. We're going to commercial, and we'll be right back.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast you're listening to. And before we went to break, we've been kind of teasing the first half of the episode. We've got some gentlemen on here that we are very excited to have on tonight. There's a new documentary coming out on the Dorton Arena in Raleigh, North Carolina, and its historical significance to the world and sport of pro wrestling. We have Cliff Baumgartner and Chris Lee here. Both guys are producers on this documentary, and then Cliff is also the director and the editor on this. Chris, I'm just going on the press release. I don't know what other work you did as far as this goes, but I want to welcome both Cliff and Chris to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast.
Thanks, guys. Cool. I'm just a producer. Cliff is definitely the star for sure. Well, hey, it's indie film, so I feel like we're both producers, caterers. We did all the limo driving. We did everything on this.
Now, when we say limo, was that like a limo or like a Prius? Or because I know in my budget, a limo is like a Prius.
I wish. No, I think it was mostly a Ford Escape.
Okay. So let's get right in here, right off the rip, man. Again, this is about the Dorton Arena in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we're going to talk a little bit more as we go along, because what I really liked about this documentary, and I watched the trailer for it, it's a 30-second trailer. I currently have that on my the app formerly known as Twitter, at the Mindless Pod. That is my pinned tweet. The link to the YouTube for the premiere, the preview, the trailer, if I can get my English straight tonight. The trailer for the When Giants Walked Here documentary that these two gentlemen are bringing to us and have put together, go check that out. It's really, really good. And what I liked about it is, one, it's kind of seems like it's calling back to an era that Rob and I really got introduced to pro wrestling. And when you look at the people who went through that building and the era that you guys are specifically kind of looking at, this is right in mine, Rob's wheelhouse. Like, we're a couple of old heads with this stuff. And I'm super excited for it. It looks like it's a labor of love on both of your parts, and you feel that in the trailer. Like, this is a passion project for the both of you. I like that. I like the era. I wanted to start it off. Who started this? Whose idea was this conceptually? And how did this start?
Cliff. That's all Cliff.
Yeah, I can kick us off. And thank you for saying that, by the way. It definitely was a labor of love all the way through. You know, we made jokes a lot during the time that, while we were producing it, that nobody makes a documentary, first and foremost, about pro wrestling in North Carolina for money. This is something you do because you love it. Yeah, the idea started with me originally. I'm born and raised in Raleigh, huge wrestling fan my whole life. And when you grow up in Raleigh, for folks who don't know, maybe you're somewhere else in the country, you're somewhere else in even in North Carolina, Dorton Arena is on the fairgrounds here in Raleigh, and you can't miss it. If you're listening to this and you don't know what the building looks like, look up a picture. It's this incredible, it looks like a spaceship. It looks like a roller coaster. It's this incredible piece of architecture that's known all over the world. And so you grow up, if you grow up in Raleigh, you know about Dorton. And when I was a kid, my dad would tell me, hey, you know, you like wrestling. There used to be wrestling there. But I was born in the early 90s. Wrestling, for the most part, stopped in Dorton in 1993. Wouldn't come back for over 20 years. And so most of the time I was in that dark period. And so I was like, what do you mean there used to be wrestling here? And I grew up with that knowledge in the back of my head somewhere. But it wasn't until I was an adult and I got back into wrestling and I really started to get into wrestling history, and specifically Southern wrestling history, Mid-Atlantic wrestling history, Southern territories, that I started seeing how many major moments kind of either happened in Dorton or major moments in wrestling and Southern wrestling history kind of mirrored things that were going on in Dorton at that time. And I just started to get interested in Dorton as a lens for looking at wrestling and wrestling as a lens for looking at Dorton, because they're both just such large figures in Southern history and in American history, as far as I'm concerned. I knew of Chris. We actually had not met at that point. We briefly worked at the same place. He works for WRAL, which has its own wrestling legacy here in Raleigh and in North Carolina. I used to work at WRAL, and I knew that Chris used to wrestle and that he was, you know, heavily involved in the wrestling community. And so I reached out to him and just said, hey, I've got this idea, but I, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I can make movies, but I'm just a wrestling fan. I don't know anybody in the industry. I don't know anybody in the business. I just know this side of the rail. And I thought that maybe he'd do an interview with me. Maybe we'd, you know, just a couple small things here and there. And over the course of the last 3 years, we became full-fledged partners on this. And he's become the other half of it. So our relationship has grown. And he brought, you know, so much of the inside perspective to this. And I'll let him pick up from there. But that's kind of where the handoff happened.
Yeah. I you know, as Cliff said, I'm from North Carolina as well. But I'm from Greensboro. So when I think of school wrestling, I think of Greensboro Coliseum. I think of all that. That's where I came from. And I got a job at WRAL as a sports anchor. And I started on March 4th, 2020. So the next week was the pandemic.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
When it started, everybody went home. And I kind of like thwarted my initial plans because I used to be a professional wrestler. It was on my resume when WRL hired me. And, you know, my first interview on the phone with the guy who hired me, you know, we were supposed to only talk for 15 minutes. We talked for 15 minutes about wrestling and then talked about the job for 30 minutes after that. So I kind of figured I had the job. And so as I learned more about the wrestling history at WRL, I knew I wanted to do something bigger than just a TV story on wrestling at WRL. I wanted to do something bigger. And WRL has its own documentary unit, which Cliff, you know, used to work for. And so I came here, figured out that they don't have any of the footage. It's actually WWE has the footage that was here. And then the pandemic happened. So, but I still was determined to try to do something. So when Cliff sent me the email with this idea, it's like, hell yeah, I want to do that. So, you know, cause it was exactly what I wanted to do coming here is to do something wrestling related, since I'm a lifelong wrestling fan and a former pro wrestler myself. So, you know, helped out with some of the contacts and getting some of the names that you see in the film and, you know, lending the expertise from the wrestling, side and here we are. So it's been a great partnership so far. I've been excited to be a part of this.
No, that's go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was going to ask like your wrestling career, how did that transpire? How did it start? How long did you do it?
Yeah. So it was only about 4 years. So it was about 4 years. And so like basically to kind of explain like me and wrestling, I was in journalism pretty much as soon as I got to college. So I worked at the Greensboro News and Record, ended up getting a job in college at 102 Jams. That's what I was doing. And so once I got into wrestling, I also started getting into news television around the same time. And so I didn't have like a different name to go by because in that same area, I'm the radio guy, I'm the TV guy. So I was just Chris Lee, you know, it's kind of boring. To some people, they're expecting like, something crazy, but I was Chris Lee, the guy from TV that people would see, or the guy that I listened to at 102 Jams, which was kind of cool because I went to this Ring of Honor show in Greensboro, and the Bravado brothers were there, and I just happened to tweet at them, and I was like, man, great show from the Bravado brothers, you know, excited to see my first Ring of Honor show. They followed me back, and they were like, oh my God, I can't believe you're a fan of me, and I'm like, wait, what? They're like, we're fans of you. We listened to you on 102 Jams. So that was that was trippy for me. And so as I started wrestling, I realized, okay, instead of having another name, I need to go by this because, you know, people kind of know me from that. But that's basically the answer to that question. But yeah, I started trained at CWF Mid-Atlantic. You know, one of my trainers there was 18 years old at the time. And he was, you know, had been in the wrestling ring his entire life. And you may know him as Cameron Grimes or Trevor Lee. Now he's like an accomplished guy. And this is 12 years later. He's almost 30. One of the guys who was in my training class, his name is Levis Valenzuela. You know him as No Way Jose. So we
together. Excellent.
Yeah, No Way Jose. Yeah, it happened. And then I was in locker rooms with guys like Adam Page, Cedric Alexander on a regular basis. So, you know, it was a fun time. I came up during a fun time in North Carolina, you know, of course, wrestled with the Bravados and, of course, Harlem Bravados, now known as Andre Chase in NXT, has Chase U and everything. So, like, there's a lot of those guys that are on television now that I used to wrestle with on a regular basis. So it was between 2012 and 2016, between CWF Mid-Atlantic, a little bit of AML wrestling, a little bit of PWX, and some other organizations that are kind of defunct now, but pretty much all around North Carolina, some parts of West Virginia, some South Carolina.
One day you and I are going to have to talk shop, because I was a pro wrestler back in the late 90s. Late 97 through almost 2000. I was in here in Florida. So I don't want to make this about your career, my career, but at some point I'd love to have you on and talk shop, because I'd love to get your thoughts on some things. But, you know, we came here to talk about the documentary, guys. So you've started the process. This has become a thing. What's the next step? Like, where do you go from here? Do you start bringing people in and interviewing, or?
Do you start begging for the footage?
Yeah. So footage was interesting, actually. One of our biggest challenges in making the film was actually getting into Dorton. We shot for 6 months before we were able to actually get access to the building. And the simple answer is it's a rental space these days. And so unless you're doing an event and you're willing to fork out what they want for a rental, it's hard to get there. We were very fortunate ultimately that FWE Wrestling, which is an independent promotion here based in Raleigh, helped us out and allowed us to come in. We were actually able to capture an FWE show in Dorton, and that's in the film. But as far as first steps, our first interview was actually with C.W. Anderson, ECW original, one of the Extreme Horsemen, who grew up in North Carolina, grew up a wrestling fan, and went to shows at Dorton when he was a kid, and went to all the classic, you know, would see Dusty Rhodes, would see Roddy Piper, would see all the legends at Dorton every week, and later got to wrestle there himself. And when wrestling came back in 2016, he got to go and wrestle in the building. And so he was our first interview. He's someone Chris used to wrestle with. And that was June of 2022. All right on that, Chris?
Yeah, when we did that first interview, yep.
We did that first interview. And at that point, we really thought the doc was going to be short. When I had first approached Chris, I said, it'll be like a 10-minute thing. We'll put it on YouTube. You know, this is a passion project. We both do this for a living, but this was something else. You know, this was something to do on the side kind of thing. And I think it was that interview, or very quickly thereafter, that we got done. And I just looked at Chris and I was like, this isn't 10 minutes. There's something else here. The passion that people have, the stories that people are sharing, the story that we're finding here is bigger than that. And so from there, it just sprawled, and kind of Chris's contacts were a massive part of it. But then also it was just sort of one interview, you know, you interview CW, then he and through Chris introduced me to George South. And so we get to go do an interview with George South, and then somebody else vouches for you and you get to go here. And you get, and so we just sort of collected, you know, it was, as far as a filmmaking process goes, it was nights, weekends, beg, borrow, steal. Like, you know, with a bigger budget, we could have done it in like 2 weeks, but instead it was about 2 years of just slowly amassing people. You mentioned the footage. We were able to get some. One of the first things I did was go to the North Carolina State Archives and found a collection of photographs from the News and Observer, which is the big paper here in Raleigh. And they were gracious enough to give us permission to use them. And so we have hundreds of mostly never before seen. A handful of them were printed in the local paper back then. But other than that, they've never been seen. We went back and got the original negatives and actually scanned the original negatives and have photos in the doc and some in the trailer that have never been released before. So it was just slowly that kind of process of just, you know, brick after brick, amassing what we could week to week, and until we ran out of time. And then it was like, okay, I guess we're done.
Excellent.
Did you ask WWE if they would play ball?
We did, and we actually, through fair use, were able to use some footage because we're commenting on some of the things that happened there. So we do have a little bit of that in the film that we are able to use. We reached out to WWE and didn't hear anything, but that's not particularly surprising. And also, there's also a good amount of footage, or there's some footage that we used in the film that at this point it's kind of hard to know who would own it, because it was like local promos that were taped at the Crockett Studios and that appeared on one television station once somewhere, and they're not in the archive. Like they exist on YouTube because collectors, you know, transferred their VHS and put it online. So we were able to get some stuff like that to actually use in the film.
Excellent.
All right. So now Rob and Jason had a couple of questions. You guys, like, collectively, like, Cliff, you answered all three of my questions in the open in the opening salvo here, which was awesome.
Yeah. So out of all people you talked to, who had the most stories?
Ooh. a good
the best stories. Yeah.
I think that the best experience, I'll say the best overall experience, because like there's a couple of the interviews I wasn't able to kind of be there because of my job in Raleigh. But I think the best experience for me, for sure, and it might be for Cliff, is when we went to Jimmy Valiant Boogie Woogie Man's camp in Virginia. Yes. And it was just, it's a unique place. It's a unique experience. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's a you know, a little small building that's on top of this hill and pretty much at the foot of the mountains in Virginia. And, you know, it's some interesting things that you see along the way getting there. And you have barely any cell phone service. And it's basically like a whole shrine to him and his career and his friends, his unique cars, his low wrestling ring, pictures all over the wall and everything. Is a very unique experience. And for him to be 81, 82 years old, whatever he is right now, I think he's about to turn 82. We interviewed him. It was like last year or 2 years ago.
It was last year. Yeah.
You know, he can recall things so easily. He's still a great storyteller. He's a good guy. He's all around great to be around. And it was cool to witness him in that way. I've told this story a couple times on these interviews, but like I first met Boogie when I was maybe like 8 years old. I was at Kmart with my mom, and he was just it was a random merch table in the middle of Kmart in Greensboro on Wendover Avenue. And my mom was like, "Oh my God, that's Boogie Woogie Man." I had no clue who he was, right? I was born in the late 80s, so I have no clue who this guy is. So she's explaining who he is and like going crazy herself. He signs an 8x10 for me. I do a little picture with him and all that. And then I start looking up his, you know, stuff later on when I got older and, you know, we started getting internet because this was like 94 or 95. So like later on, a few years later, start looking up things about him on the internet and had him down as one of the wrestling schools I wanted to potentially go to. And then when I was a wrestler, one Thanksgiving night, I was his tag team partner against a group called the Mid-Atlantic Outlaws, and they were heels. So of course, since we were the babyface tag team, I took all the moves and tagged him in for the hot tag, and he did his thing. And tagged me back in. I did my splash, 1, 2, 3, and we won.
Oh, man.
And so it was a cool experience to now go from, you know, meeting him for the first time, then meeting him as a pro wrestler to team with him, and then to actually like interview him on a documentary. So that was probably my favorite one.
Oh man, that's great.
That is incredibly cool, yeah. Man. That really is. I love Chris. I in my research for this podcast episode, I did pull one of your matches. I looked you up. I pulled your match. One of your matches. I can't remember who you wrestled. I had it saved, and then I closed out my browser and lost the match. What a great thing to watch. Awesome match, by the way. And it brought me back to when indie wrestling is so cool. Like, it really was a cool thing to be an indie wrestler, and watching you in that match, I was like, holy crap, if I wasn't almost 51 years old, maybe one more time, just watching it. So it's just a very cool thing for me to watch and kind of reminisce on.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I don't know. Maybe I haven't wrestled since 2016, but I don't know. Maybe there might be a couple more left in me. We'll see. I've had kids since then, and My daughter has been wanting to see me wrestle, so we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. The last time I got, you talk about short rings. A lady friend of mine was dating a wrestler several years ago, and they did a show here locally, and I was like, hey, brother, you let an old man, you know, run the ropes a little bit, take a couple bumps in your ring before the show? He said, sure. I got in there, and that's just low rings are weird. Like, it's hurt. Very strange. They do hurt. Well, hurt. It hurts anyway.
But it's a different to me, at least Boogie's ring. I mean, that was maybe just a foot off the ground. I would definitely not like to take any more bumps in that type of ring.
No, definitely not.
I have a video on my phone. I've been joking that I need to release it to promote the doc of Chris taking a bump in Boogie's ring, and immediately the expression on his face, it's like you just dumped a bucket of cold water on his face. Oh my God.
How long had it been since you'd taken a bump, period, before you bumped in that ring?
So, you know what's interesting? So I think Cliff saw me bump twice because we had an interview with Brad Stutz, who actually used to be the booker at CWF Mid-Atlantic. But he's somebody who just is – he's been a booker. He's been a wrestling commentator in North Carolina. Knows a lot about the history of wrestling. Just one of those guys that knows so much. And so we did an interview with him at the AML training facility. And so when I got there, I was like, ooh, ring, let me bump. It was like, you know, like a dog. It's like, ooh, squirrel, you know, that type of thing. So I had to bump there as well. And so I bumped at Boogie's ring as well. So I think those interviews are maybe a month apart from each other.
Yeah.
But before those interviews, it probably, I think I rolled around with my guy Darius Lockhart like one time in 2018. So I guess it had been 5 years between those bumps.
Wow. Yeah. You feel it when you do that first one, man. I tell you what.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we go on this, you talk Jimmy Boogie Woogie Man, and this is right in Rob and I's wheelhouse. Cause again, like I said, we're the old heads on this. And, you know, my introduction to pro wrestling was the NWA. We had, Florida, it was championship wrestling from Florida. They used to work out of the Eddie Graham Sports Authority, and I was just looking it up. And then you had the Omni in Atlanta, and Dorton is in those conversations. And that's so awesome to me. And I never thought about it because you watch these things. And of course, yeah, you hear Raleigh, North Carolina, and you never hear just me being from Florida and being kind of isolated here. The Omni was the big one because it was the closest big one to us. And just that whole southeastern kind of rotation that these guys went through. It's cool to be talking to a couple of guys who are linked to my history as a fan. And you know, we talk about that era. Rob, I pulled some of the history on there. There was a Nature Boy versus Nature Boy match there for the NWA World Championship back in 1985. It was Buddy Landell versus champion Ric Flair.
Wow.
That's history, dude. Like, that's cool.
We covered that in the film. So we actually, that's one of the matches we kind of zoom in on and tell the story of, specifically because up to that point, it would actually be beaten the next year by the Great American Bash Tour. But up to that point, it was the highest grossing match and the biggest sellout in
they sold the whole place out,
yeah, big time. And for a single match, it's still the highest. Like I said, the Bash Tour is kind of a different deal that sold it out the following year, but you know, for a single main event, non-televised, just a, you know, weekly show, yeah, it was massive.
Yeah,
so you guys clearly interviewed a lot of people for this. Was there anybody who you kind of chased down or was on the wish list or anything like that that it didn't quite connect? Or did anybody tell you to go screw off or, you know, any stories there?
Let's see.
Holy shit.
He's got the list of Chris Lee.
Arm bar.
Big pop.
So there's a few, and you know, there's different reasons for different folks. It was either, you know, they wanted to, and maybe just logistically it couldn't work out, or time wise it couldn't work out. There's a guy by the name of Chuck Coates who used to be a pro wrestler. He was Mad Max back in like the late 80s. He wrestled at Dorton. He's a Raleigh native. Just logistically, it just didn't work out. We wanted to try to go after guys like Tony Schiavone and guys like Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette lives in Kentucky, so it's kind of hard to – we could get up there, but it's paying for the hotels, you know, the crew and that type of thing, and also just having the time to do so. And I don't know – I don't think we ever heard back from him. Then, you know, Tony Schiavone is busy. He's on the road with AEW. We went to Bobby Fulton is in the dock, and the same place where we were at, which was at a wrestling event where he did the interview for us. You know, Arn Anderson and Barbarian were there, and they both told us no. Arn Anderson was like, I didn't like Dorton. have nothing good to say about it. And we're like, cool, that could be in the doc. Say things that you didn't like. And he was like, nah, I'll pass on it, which is interesting because I actually just saw Arn Anderson this past weekend at an AML show, and he was excited to see the documentary now with it, you know, but he was very nice about it. Barbarian was just like, nah. And if you go up to the Barbarian, he tells you no, you just quickly walk away. So
don't push him on it.
Yeah. So it was definitely a few people that we wanted to try to get to, that we couldn't get to for whatever reason or the other. But I think also the other part of it is, Cliff and I are, as far as this is concerned, like, people don't know us for this in wrestling. So I think once this is out, if you know, we have some ideas, some things that we want to do in the future, I think it'll be easier to get some certain yeses that we weren't able to get. But I would say out of everybody who's there, the biggest name who probably has achieved the most success on a national level is Shane Helms. He's somebody that I've been blessed to share a locker room with before, had his phone number. We've conversed a few times. He was somebody who gave me a lot of great advice while I was a wrestler. And he said yes, and he, you know, came to Cliff's house to do the interview. So,
nice. That's very cool.
Yeah,
that was a wild day for
really,
sure.
There really was a hurricane coming through.
I know. Growing up in Raleigh, you know, growing up here, he was the only guy announced from Raleigh. We had plenty of Charlottes. We had Cameron with the Hardys. You had a couple other places around North Carolina. I think there's Winston-Salem maybe for a couple of people. But Shane was the only one in the hurricane days. He was announced from Raleigh. And so I remember as a kid, that just being like the coolest thing in the world, that the hurricane was, you know, was from my town. So, yeah, to actually get to meet him and work with him in the film was really cool. And he shared a perspective that I think people may not expect in the film, which is, yeah, we talk a lot about, you know, 70s, 80s. We even go back to the early days through some newspaper records into the 60s of when wrestling first came to Dorton. And so we are talking a lot about those mid-Atlantic days that people, you know, would expect. But there's also been a resurgence at Dorton. You know, it's not as big as it once was, but there is indie wrestling there again. There's a couple of shows there every year now, and Shane was part of promoting the first one that came back in 2016. And so kind of the whole third act of the film is about that. It's about the return and about the resurgence, which I think is something that people may not, you know, may not know about or may be surprised when they hear about. And so we're kind of also spreading the word that, like, if you've seen the history, if you love the history, if you watched the film and you're excited about it, you can go relive this. It's still happening, which is really cool, you know, to get to do a piece about history, but something that you can still experience to this day. And Dorton has not changed. It looks the same. It still does not have air conditioning.
That's probably why Arn Anderson hated it.
One of them, yeah.
One of the reasons.
You know, it's still very much the same building it always was. You go down into the locker rooms, and, I mean, it looks exactly like the photos that we saw to this day. So you can go experience that now, and that's something that Shane shared with us, C.W. Anderson shared with us. Actually, Jimmy Valiant has since returned to Dorton, and so we got to talk to him about it too. So that was a whole other special side of the doc that I'm really excited for people to see, and that I hope, you know, I hope it helps things continue down the road.
Well, that torpedoes the other half of my question, because I was going to ask you, hey, so what's the scene like now? What's the wrestling like there? But apparently you'll just have to tune in on PBS.com and find out.
That's a great way. People can, if you're not in North Carolina, you can get the PBS app. It's free. You can get it on your phone right now. Go ahead and get ready for the show. Chris is showing it off on camera as we speak. And yeah, no matter where you are in the country, you can get the app as soon as the doc is done on August 8th, next Thursday. It's a week from the time that we're recording this, which is freaky. It's freaking us out right now. Yes. But yeah, August 8th, as soon as it's off of air here in North Carolina, it's going to be on the app, and you can watch it anytime, anywhere.
There's a 2-minute trailer here. There's a 30-second trailer here already, so the landing page is already ready, so you can go check it out. Go ahead and download that PBS app. That's the major push that we want to put out there. It's just, you know, if you want to continue to see more content like this, and we think this is important too, and this is another thing that we like to talk about, is the fact that outside of WWE and Vice, there's not a lot of places that have wrestling documentaries. Like, there's been a few here and there, But WWE is going to tell their side of the story, and you know how they you know won the war and all that type of stuff. Then you're going to see Vice talk about the negative stuff, the underbelly of wrestling. And so we're part of this group of independent people who are telling these independent stories about wrestling, and this one more so dealing with this particular place and the culture and how it represents and impacts a particular area, and in this case, the locale of Raleigh and the surrounding areas. And so we think that's important. Those are important parts of storytelling as well. And so, if you have some moments, look at it 2 times, 3 times, 15 times, however many times. But, if you look at it a lot, then it helps get funding for future projects so we can have more wrestling storytelling and diverse wrestling storytelling out there.
And piggybacking off what you just said, I was listening to you guys on an interview on another show, and I forget the name. Again, I closed out all my tabs, so I can't even remember the name of the show. It was on YouTube. You guys were talking about how PBS really doesn't cater to wrestling and how cool it was that they, agreed to bring this show on board. So that's got to be a pretty cool feeling for you guys. And that just speaks volumes as to how hot professional wrestling is now, but how intrinsic it is to Americana in general, as a form of entertainment, and people will feel how they want about pro wrestling, and the naysayers will always have their say. But those, what's the phrase? For those that believe, no explanation is necessary. For those that don't, no explanation will do. Yeah. And for people like us, we get it. And that history is so important. And for PBS to finally latch onto that has got to feel good to you guys.
It does. I mean, it was very exciting to have PBS on board. Look, we're all wrestling fans. I am squarely in the wrestling bubble, and there's nothing wrong with that. I want to make that really clear for what I'm about to say. But we also didn't just want this to be a wrestling doc. You know what I mean? We wanted it to be that, when ESPN makes a 30 for 30, it's not just a football doc, right? When Ken Burns makes country music, it's not just a country music. It's a documentary. It's a film. It's a piece of history. It's a piece of culture. We wanted to do that with this because we felt like the story deserved it at the end of the day, not for us, but the story and the people who shared their stories with us, it really lived up to that. And so having PBS on board really meant a lot, and having them see that and help us, and they provided some guidance. They were a great sounding board because they're not in the wrestling bubble, and so they just want things to make sense. It doesn't, they don't care about, oh, but it's a reference to this one. They don't care. They just need to make sense. And that was a great perspective for us to have too. And to a point that you made a second ago, I think, you said, people may feel how they feel about wrestling. People may or may not be fans. I'm of this mindset that people at the end of the day, Chris says all the time, everybody's got a wrestling story. Right. Mm-hmm. No matter who you are, no matter whether you've actually sat down and watched wrestling or not. And I don't think it's an accident that in the last few years, maybe wrestling on television, as big as wrestling is, and WWE is killing it, AEW is crushing it, everybody's doing great. I'm not downplaying that at all. But, the numbers aren't what they once were. Right. And TV's different. Media is different. Sure. But at the same time, a couple of years ago, the number one comedy on television was Young Rock, which is a show about wrestling. One of the biggest Netflix shows 5 to 10 years ago was Glow, which is about wrestling. One of the biggest movies last year was about the Von Erichs. It's not wrestling, right? It's the way wrestling is presented to people, and it's how people come to it. And I think that there is an era of fan. You guys mentioned, you and Rob mentioned that you guys come from that era. There's an era where when you take wrestling seriously and it's presented seriously, people react to it a different way, and people come to it a different way. I love everything that's out there. But for us, like Chris mentioned, I think when it comes to the documentary side and it comes to how to talk about wrestling, we want to do it in a way that takes it seriously and says, this is, we look at it as a sport. We look at it as culture. We look at it as, it's entertainment. But that doesn't diminish the seriousness of it at all. Doesn't diminish the business of it and what it did for, look, I'm from rural North Carolina. What the thought of Crockett Promotions back in the 80s making millions of dollars a year here, my head just starts going into what that did for the community, how that bled into the community and what that meant culturally, what that meant financially. Like, all of that stuff is really important, and I don't see that being talked about and presented to audiences very often. So like, I'm not a huge, you know, I'm not a basketball fan, but The Last Dance was awesome because it's a story about, you know, a personality and family and everything else. That's the way that we want to look at and present wrestling. And when I think when you do that, maybe it helps break down some of those barriers for some people. Yeah. And there's always going to be people who aren't going to like it no matter what. And that's fine. Yeah. But I do think it's also a way to, you know, expand the tent a little bit for people. So we've been telling people, and maybe if you're listening to this, you're probably a wrestling fan, but if you have people in your family who aren't, if you have people, you know, your friends who aren't wrestling fans, they can still get something out of the movie.
Yep.
You know, they're going to walk. They're going to walk away from it going, wow, that's a heck of a story. One of our first private test screenings that we did, was for all non-wrestling people. And there was one moment in the film, and I won't spoil it, but there was one moment as we're talking about wrestling leaving Dorton where one of the guys just leaned forward and went, that is so effed up. You know, storytelling still works. It doesn't matter if you're a wrestling fan or not. So that's another thing we just want people to know is, you know, whatever your background, whoever you can get to watch the film, there really is something for everybody. And I think that's, you know, it's great for a doc, but that's also what makes wrestling great.
And just to quickly expand on that, like, Darren, I don't know if this has happened to you before in the past, but like when people have heard I used to be a pro wrestler, like it doesn't matter if they're a fan or not, if they watched religiously or not, they want to have a conversation about it.
Facts.
You know, they want to know. You know, wait a minute, is it real? Is it scripted? Or I heard that people do this. Or have you met this person? What's it like in a locker room? How does that bump feel? How does it feel when you're going against the ropes? You know, like all kinds of questions, even down to the point of like, I told you guys, it was a huge part of my first phone interview for this job in the building I'm in right now that I have to, you know, be on television for later on, after, you know, we're done talking. One of the reasons why it was even brought up is I went to this NABJ conference in 2018 in Detroit. Right across the water is Canada. So I go across the water, end up sitting down at this place to have something to eat, get some poutine. There's this lady from CNN, sees my badge, comes and talks to me because we're at the same conference. And so we're just getting to know each other and all that. And I look over, I see this TNA flyer with some people that I knew on it. And I was like, oh, I know some of those guys. I guess TNA had just done a show in Windsor recently from that. And she was like, oh, how do you know them? I used to be a wrestler. She was like, really? And we start talking about it. She's like, wait a minute, is that on your resume? I was like, no, why would it be? And she was like, put it on your resume. Trust me. And it was the next year where all of a sudden, you know, I had all these offers from these different places. And, you know, I don't talk about this place a lot, but there's a place actually in Florida. I won't say which one because we didn't get deep into talking. But I had the feeling that if I didn't have WRL and two other offers in other places, and we were already pretty much far along in our talks, that this place in Florida would have also hired me because that was one of the main things that they were excited about because they knew that they had WWE around. WWE does a lot in Florida as well. And at that point, they knew WrestleManias were coming up, and they wanted somebody who could talk the language, who could speak the language. And they wanted to cover that from a sports perspective. So they were just a little bit late in the process, and I just didn't, you know, I didn't want to leave WRL and other places hanging with my answers to their offers. But you know, it really has brought me extra opportunity since doing it. It's literally the best thing that I ever could have done for my broadcast career is become a pro wrestler. And I didn't know it at the time, but it's literally the best thing I could have done for my broadcast career. And so with that knowledge and knowing that and seeing how people react, whether they're fans or not, it shows what a hold it has on people and how it captures people's imaginations. And we hope to do the same thing with the film. Whether they're fans or not, everybody can watch this and enjoy it.
Excellent. So we have one more question, then we'll, because I know you guys are probably close on time. I think it sounds like you're still working, Chris, so I won't keep you guys too much longer. One quick question. As a content creator, sometimes we do a whole bunch of content, but we can only put so much in the documentary. Was there stuff that hit the cutting room floor that you look back and you're like, I wish I could have added it, but we just can't for time or flow or in context of the story?
Honestly, not as much as you might think or that would usually be. We had a kind of an interesting opportunity that if anyone, you know, like you guys being content creators will understand, and any filmmakers will go, wow, that never happens. We originally cut the doc to be television length, which is about 42 to 44 minutes, depending on where you're airing. PBS, because they're public broadcasting, they don't have ads. It's actually 56 minutes. So a lot of what we had cut actually got to go back in. So at one point we had a director's cut, and that just kind of became the real cut. So we were very lucky in that regard that so much went in. I think on that side of things, the biggest thing that comes to mind is just like making a film at the end of the day about a building is tough, right? Because there's so many places you can go, and there's so much that you could talk about. Tack on to that wrestling history, right? Southern wrestling history. We're talking about, in the span of the doc, we're talking about 40 or 50 years alone, not to mention everything that came before that. So it's like, what became our challenge was what do you tell, right? What do you include? And what we had to do ultimately was say, you know, we had plenty of footage and plenty of interview and everything about Crockett Promotions, for example. At the end of the day, we had to go, it's not a Crockett doc. It's a Dorton doc, and Crockett is a huge part of that, right? No question about it. And the ultimate, you know, the kind of the downfall of Crockett and the sale to Turner is a big point in the history of Dorton. It's one of the reasons that wrestling ultimately went away from Dorton. So we talk about that in the film, but for me as the wrestling fan, I was going like, oh, we're having to simplify the sale of Crockett so much. Like, I wish we could go into more detail or explain the various factors. But that's not what the film's about, right? It was more important to go, here's how this thing happening, for whatever reason it happened, and there's obviously various arguments to this day, but for whatever reason it happened, here's how it affected the people that we're talking about and the place that we're talking about and the world that we're actually talking about in the film. So there's definitely stuff that got left on the floor, not necessarily from like great Dorton stuff we had to leave out, but more from just the history that had to get simplified in order to tell a greater story in the end. But other than that, no. I mean, we even got to put back, I'll give a little tease. If you watch the film, stick around after the credits, because we have a little bonus with the Boogie Woogie Man that we got to put back in the film that I'm excited for people to see.
And another thing with that too is like, I remember one time Cliff sending me a clip of Roddy Piper talking about getting stabbed in Raleigh. And so that instantly for us was like, oh snap, we got to figure this out, you know? And so we go back into history and we noticed there was like this gap of time in the early 80s where wrestling wasn't at Dorton. And what we end up figuring out was, you know, there's times where Dorton was getting, you know, I guess some facelifts and some renovations. So they'd moved to another location in downtown Raleigh. And that was actually where Piper got stabbed. So ultimately, that's not a Dorton story, you know, or maybe it happens because it's not at Dorton, right? Because, you know,
it's adjacent.
It's adjacent, yeah. But it's not necessarily the story of Dorton. So it's things like that where, you know, you find this out and you don't necessarily, it's interesting, it's cool to talk about, but you don't necessarily go after it and you know, put it in there, right? So I think there were times where things like that happened. And then also, like, the station I work at, the same studio I do sports in every night, that same studio is where Crockett Promotions would do, you know, their TV show at. It's where Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat's feud began in the early 80s, right? And so they'd use that spot to kind of sell the shows that were coming up. And we, you know, talk about that a little bit, but we don't really go in on WRL as much as we could, because it's ultimately not the Dorton story. So there's things like that where it's not necessarily things that we shot or put out there, but we just didn't necessarily, we found them out along the way, said, oh, that's cool, and kind of moved on and went to the things that were kind of important.
Yeah, I think our measuring stick ended up being like, if the wrestling historians say we didn't do enough, and the non-wrestling people say we did too much, then we're probably in the right space.
Yeah.
Right in the middle, that's probably the right place to be.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe this opens up a wider door for you guys to tell more wrestling stories or tell more history stories.
I hope so. That's the hope. That's the dream. And we've definitely, some stuff has come up along the way, and even just more broadly in working with PBS and kind of fielding their questions throughout the process, we definitely see that there's room to do not only something else, but something bigger next time to take this view of wrestling that we sort of found while working on this particular film and expand on that and, you know, really talk about wrestling as a piece of Americana and a piece of American cultural history, entertainment history, sports history, you name it. So this definitely will not be the last. I'm a full-time filmmaker, obviously Chris full-time journalist, and so we have more stuff coming out over the next year or two that some of it's wrestling related, some of it's not, but we're hoping that there will definitely be more in the wrestling space very soon.
Excellent. Good to hear. Before we get out of here, I'm going to give you guys a chance to plug your socials or whatever you want. Chris, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm at Chris Lea TV. My last name is spelled L-E-A. You know, it's that's people like to talk about the spelling of my last name, but that's how it was given to me. So I have to go with it. And you can find me on Instagram or the site formerly known as Twitter. And just a reminder to download the PBS app. And that's where you can find us. And we'll have all kinds of updates and things like that. Also, if you are planning on going to WrestleCade, it's a big time event that happens in Winston-Salem, North Carolina every year. TNA is actually going to do a pay-per-view from WrestleCade on that Friday night. I can't remember the dates. We are also going to have another showing of When Giants Walked here in November at WrestleCade with another Q&A afterwards. So if you missed the one that's coming up in Raleigh next week, but still watch it on your PBS app, but want to watch it with us and other professional wrestlers later, you can do so at WrestleCade. And if you have a three-day pass or all-day Saturday pass at WrestleCade, you can come in and watch it for free after WrestleCade Saturday is done.
Okay, Cliff, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm at Cliff Bumgardner pretty much everywhere. I've got a weird name, so it's pretty easy to find. I always tell people that Bumgardner is spelled phonetically like a good-for-nothing gardener. So remember, you're hooked on phonics and you'll find me. And yeah, November 30th is the screening date at WrestleCade, just to piggyback off of what Chris said. As soon as the major show that night wraps up, the screening will start. And we have a lot of AML and WrestleCade folks in the film, so we're hoping to get as many people who are there to watch the film with us. So WrestleCade's an amazing event, and we're really looking forward to bringing the film there as well.
And one last time, before I forget, this is live on PBS on the 8th.
Thursday, August 8th, 10 p.m., live on PBS North Carolina. It's going to rerun on PBS and most likely other PBS stations in the weeks following, but it'll be live in North Carolina at 10 p.m. And then as soon as it goes off the air, you can find it on the PBS app indefinitely anywhere you are, and watch anytime you want.
Absolutely. All right. Guys, I want to thank Cliff Bumgardner, Chris Lea from the When Giants Walked Here documentary/movie. Guys, this has been awesome. Like, truly, truly awesome. Enjoyed the hell out of having you guys on here.
Thanks so much, guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We'll go back to that list for later on, maybe for future documentaries.
Yeah, I definitely want to have you back on. I want to talk shop with you, my man.
All right. See you guys.
All right, gentlemen. Peace out. Have a good night, okay?
Okay, guys. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, guys.
And that's going to wrap it up for us here. This has been the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the Chairshot Radio Network, again, to be found on thechairshot.com. I'm going to go around the room and thank my co-hosts here, Jason, sir. Fun night.
It's too bad they're not here anymore, because I was going to ask them who they acknowledge as their tribal chief.
there it is. That's right.
There it is.
That's right.
And from the Rob the Genius podcast, the man who put this together tonight, Rob, sir, good time.
Yes, always a pleasure, man, and thank you both of you guys for coming.
All right, remember, you can call it pro wrestling, you can call it sports entertainment, you can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring, and we're out of here until next week where we're talking all things SummerSlam.